Anyhow, Phil Conan is here. Phil, are you following events in Burkina Faso?
I am, and it's fascinating. I mean, I remember, of course, when I was in high school, watching the decolonization process going on in Africa, and it was really exciting. And then, of course, there were all these colonies that the French were having to give up. And even then, I mean, people were saying they don't really want to be leaving here. They're not doing it willingly. And of course, as we learned, they didn't really leave. You know, they set up these governments and stuff like that, but then they kept their fingers on all of them. And this was a place that really tried to break away from that. Yeah. And they paid a heavy price. You know?
Yeah. And it's still, look, France is leading the charge against Syria. Yeah. We forget Mr. Hollande is the noisiest. And he talks, he doesn't, it's just like I would say to him, he forgets himself. He is not the leader of Syria. It's none of his blasted business. But he's all for, you know, more arms, more killing. He'll do as he pleases because he's a child of the empire. You know, he believes in it. And he's poison. And we do this thing, we treat him with respect. You know, oh, well, he's the president of France and what a great democracy and all that. Meanwhile, minority people getting kicked around him and Roma being thrown around. And their wealthy class is smaller and smaller, just like the one here. So, meanwhile, his opponent, and President Assad of Syria, they said to him, a French program interviewed Assad, and they said, is there any message you want to, we're going back to France, anything you want to say? He said, tell the President of France that the people of Syria believe in liberty, equality, and fraternity, and we'd like to know whether he does.
Whoa.
And then he said...
That's a wonderful...
Yeah, he said, and by the way, he does. I mean, see, he's conversant with the language. It's really like the President Gbagbo of Ivory Coast. He said, you know, I'm fighting these reactionaries come into my country from Burkina Faso, armed by Mr. Campari, Powery. And he said, so to us, this is like, he said, we're at the Bastille. But he said, except that I have Amnesty International looking over my shoulder. They're not looking over the other guy's shoulder. They look over his shoulder. So, what the chorus, they're based in those in the imperialist capitals. What do you expect them to be? They echo the capital because that's where that's where they get their capital. No money from Washington, London. There's no amnesty. They echo that. But again, Assad said about the situation, he said, you know, when the French, remember, they were under the French. When the French left Syria, he said, they left intending to come back. He said, they didn't leave like goodbye. It was, I'll see you. And that's what we're having to deal with. It's the if we have an illness, it is the illness of empire and greed. The idea that because you're the most powerful country on the earth, you're exceptional. American exceptionalism. They didn't create that. The British feel the same way. They just that they don't happen to be the most powerful anymore. But they, by the way, definitely were. And the French still regard themselves this way. Actually, I was just reading a remark the other day by, of all people, the brother of Napoleon Bonaparte. People may not remember, but when Napoleon was finally defeated, his brother moved to New Jersey. His brother had been the king of Spain, I think, and he settled in a nice home in New Jersey, and then he gave interviews to anybody who wanted to come see him, and everybody wanted to come see him. And in one of his interviews, he said, they said, how do you feel being here? You were once part of the great empire. And he said, I feel wonderful. He says, I'm a Republican. I'm more extreme as a Republican than you, to the guy interviewing him. I suppose he's referring to slavery. But he said, and I never liked the idea of empire. yes, that's where some of the great figures of the French Revolution ended up in the U.S. Well, we have some moments left. I have this will be a curious one. I'm going to apologize to General Proctor, and this is part of our ongoing series, Get to Know 1812. The War of 1812 is if 200 years ago, and at this date, it's drawing to a close. The meeting is taking place in Ghent, Holland, or is it Belgium?
No, Belgium.
Ghent, Belgium. And the sine qua non of the British position for the peace, they said, sine qua non, as if Phil knows what he's talking about, is that the Native Americans will be given a territory, an autonomous territory, south of the Great Lakes. That was what they said. And the talks happened, and the talks ended on December the 24th, as Phil kind of knows, he looked it up, and they signed the agreement, and there was no territory for the Native Americans. The sine qua non was gone. And anyway, this brings me to General Proctor in the War of 1812. Proctor is considered in our history, he's not mentioned. We don't have a statue to him. We have a statue to Brock. Everybody knows that. We have a cult of Brock in Canada. And I'm quoting William Lyon Mackenzie, the great first mayor of Toronto, one of the great figures. He said, there was a reason behind it. It was a Tory reason. They wanted to establish the idea of the empire and the British. And so they decided on Brock. And then they made a villain out of Proctor. And I have bought into it a little bit, and that's why I'm apologizing to him in his memory. Because when he was defeated at the Battle of the Thames, there's hardly any monument there, and Tecumseh died in October of 1813. Of course, there was a court-martial. When you're a general and you are defeated, there's a court-martial. That, by the way, doesn't mean you're guilty of something. It means they want to investigate charges of how this thing happened. So Proctor had to face a court-martial. It took him a year to get the court-martial organized. But he made a defense there, and I don't see anybody respecting what he said. But he told some very interesting things, which are not shared with us. He was accused of not sufficiently removing his forces quickly enough from the fort in Detroit that they had taken, the British had taken from the Americans. When the Americans captured Lake Erie, Proctor had to withdraw. They said, well, you were too slow in your withdrawal. That's a crime number one. And then crime number two, you didn't burn and destroy the bridges behind you, making it easy for the Americans to catch up and catch you at the Thames. And then three, you chose a very poor place to battle, to fight. Well, Proctor said, I really find these charges interesting. He said, I thought we had allies. You're always talking about our allies, the natives. He said, do you realize that they did not want me to withdraw at all? You say I didn't withdraw fast enough. He said, if you consider my situation, there were more native fighters than there were British. And I am at Detroit, and you want me to immediately withdraw without their agreement. He said, they did not agree, you know. And a lot of people make fun of Proctor about how he was saying, we got to withdraw, and Tecumseh said, you're a coward. Well, that wasn't, of course, he's following orders. He's going to withdraw. But he said, I wanted them to understand why I was withdrawing, because I wanted them to cooperate, because we didn't want to lose them as allies. Do you remember that? He's saying to his prosecutor, you remember we didn't want to lose them as our allies? And then he said, also, I thought we were going to be fighting some more. I'm not running for my life. I'm trying to reposition. But he said, after all, that's an autonomous people. They have fought with us because they wanted to capture Ohio. We weren't able to capture Ohio. Now I'm having to withdraw from Detroit. And he said, you say I didn't destroy the bridges. He said, well, that's some of them I did. He said, the ones that I thought needed to be destroyed, I destroyed them. But he said, you forget that the natives, when I convinced them, Tecumseh, that we had to go, they weren't in the same camp with us. He said, I never saw them. Somebody had to go and get their forces together and withdraw. I headed for the Thames, and he said, I didn't want them to be on the wrong side of the bridge. If I destroy the bridge, how are they going to follow? He said, you're telling me I should have sacrificed our native allies. He says, oh, get off my case already, basically. And then he said something where I really do apologize, because I've always pictured him as a guy trying to get to, he had the right flank of the British Army, in Lake, basically covering Lake Erie, Detroit. And the center was at Fort George, Niagara Falls. And he said, I'm not an idiot. I know better than to lead an army directly to the other army. In other words, you know, run into the house with a guy chasing. You don't do that. They'd have captured Fort George. So he said, I made a stand where I made the stand. And he said, you tell me I didn't pick the right place. He said, well, I had the river on my left. I had a swamp to the right. There's a narrow road. I had good troops. I had native allies. And he said that, and I was beyond the rapids. So I thought, okay, we'll stand and fight. But then there's something happened. It was actually unprecedented. The guys from Missouri, there were about 600 of them. These are militiamen, not very disciplined Americans. And they thought they should have a cavalry charge. And nobody was ready for that. The British thought, what are they doing? They just rode directly into the British fire. But they did it so fast and it's so disorganized that it completely smashed the British lines. And to this day, nobody who gave, even those who gave the order. The great Harrison, the commander of the American side, did not give the order, because that wouldn't have been, from a military point of view, not a very smart thing to do. But these crazy guys from Missouri did it anyway. And a last detail, this is where the natives' interests should be talked about more intelligently. When they withdrew from Detroit and Amherstburg, Malden, if you want to say all those things, half of the native forces stayed behind. They did not follow Tecumseh. And we should stop making a cult out of Tecumseh. He was a living human being. He was a political figure. He had a vision, and he had people who agreed, and he had people who disagreed. And there were a very large number who stayed behind. And it's often said, well, they signed a peace treaty with the Americans. They did more than that. They signed an alliance to attack the British. It wasn't a treaty just for, oh, yeah, you can have your land. No, no. They had to agree to attack the British. So that was a huge setback for the British. And it has to be appreciated. And in terms of Proctor, it wasn't his fault. He did everything. He was trying to maintain the alliance. So people ought to take an interest in the War of 1812 and, first of all, smash all the monuments, because the monuments will teach you nothing. They're all lies. The monuments are built in order to contemporize political myth. It's not true. You want to look at what actually happened. And you could start with Proctor's defense of himself. By the way, he was cleared. He had 5 charges. He was cleared of 4. They couldn't disagree on his reasoning for slowness leaving Detroit. I think they felt that he should have done a better job of defending, fighting at the Thames. But anyway, they tossed that one out. This is the Taylor Report. It's CIUT. It's 89.5 FM. We're Facebook, The Taylor Report. And you can write to us at taylor@cIUT.FM. And I'll leave you a little poem, because it was, tomorrow's the 11th day, the 11th hour, the blah, blah. Hugh McDermott said, a war to save civilization, you say. And what have you to do with it, pray? Some attempt to acquire it would show greater love than fighting for something you know nothing of. That's the Taylor Report. See you next week.